Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sundar Chaitanya Prabhu has introduced me, presumably to impress in your minds what an important person I am, so that you'll all listen very seriously to what I have to say. Hare Krishna. Sound is okay? Can you all hear? No. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you can hear me at the back, please raise your hand. A few tentative hands. Can you all hear over there? Yeah, okay. All right, let me say it again. I'm very important. Let's not beat around the bush. Let's just get to the point. Well, that's what every damn fool says. That's what they think. We happen to be sitting in the room of the most important, actually important person, Srila Prabhupada, who is the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as you are probably aware. What is the importance of Srila Prabhupada? He's a great scholar, he's a great philosopher, he had many disciples, he built many temples, including this temple. But we cannot judge the value of a pure devotee of Krishna by their achievements alone. The tendency is to evaluate people according to their achievements. You may see an obituary in a newspaper. Someone achieved some some cinema star got so many awards, some cricket player had so many test centuries, and therefore they are considered great, great cricketers. They took so many wickets by their achievements, or someone developed a great business empire. They did something. They came into this world and they did something. They made a difference. So Srila Prabhupada also, he made a difference. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. But we may think, well, there are gurus who are doing much more. There's some idiot. Well, that's, I guess you could say that's subjective. Well, according to Shastra, he's an idiot also. Some fellow with a beard who goes around the world and teaches people or pretends to teach people something about, I don't know what he teaches actually, but anyway, he's famous as a big guru. He has many followers. There's not much to follow, so it doesn't mean much to be his follower. But he's famous as a great guru. Prabhupada didn't have so many disciples. So what is the actual value? Can we evaluate Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, by comparing him to other people? No. Because his contribution is of a completely different caliber to those of anyone else in this material world, including the so-called gurus. So-called gurus, we say they're so-called gurus, because a real guru is one who teaches us to come out of birth and death, who points us toward the actual goal of life, who knows what the actual goal of life is, and who gives us practical guidance how to go there. Whereas there are so many cheaters who are supposed to be, or they dress in a manner in which people would expect a guru to be dressed, and they know how to do the guru show, guru giri. Just like you have gundagiri, so guru giri. The gundas, they rob people's money. And gurus do the same thing. But they do it in a more crafty way. That's stated in Shastra. Bahavo guruvo santi shishya vitapaharaka. There are many gurus who are very expert in looting their disciples. Stated by Lord Shiva. Durlabham Sadguru Devi Shisha Santapaharaka. But it's very rare to find the actual guru who can take away not the money, but the santap, the miseries of the disciple. Srila Prabhupada is far more important than anyone else of his period. Because he was able, and he did, give the actual meaning of life. If he gave that even to one person, that would still make him more important than millions of so-called gurus, millions of so-called politicians, welfare workers, doctors, engineers, and so on. In fact, the only thing of any value that anyone can actually give is Krishna. A knowledge of Krishna, and everything else is either a big zero or a small zero. It all comes to nothing. Whether you paint a zero like this and decorate it and put some flashing lights, or whether it's just a little zero on a piece of paper, it all has the same value, zero. So in the same way, some people become very big in this world. As students, you're trying to enhance your position, to become bigger than others by the medium of education. But without Krishna consciousness, it's a big zero. It's all valueless, ultimately valueless. And we may think, well, that's not true, because if I do study and get a good job, people call it a good job. I don't have any jobs good, but people think a good job. Good job means it pays more money than most. And I can get a good job, and that's better than having a bad job. And then I'll be happy. And I'll have, I might even be able to afford, if I get a crore or two of rupees together, a tiny little apartment somewhere in Bombay. And I'll be prestigious, and everything will be wonderful. There's a lot of problems with that statement, although most people unquestioningly accept that this is what we should do with our life. We should study, get a good job, and take out a mortgage, and get a little pigeonhole somewhere, and be happy. Most people unquestioningly accept that, which is pretty stupid, if you think about it. But most people don't think. That's unquestioning means they don't think. They just accept what everyone else tells them. Or the unspoken goal of everyone's life is to get money and get ahead and get a good job. So, this education is actually making people more foolish. Because if anyone was actually intelligent, they should inquire into the meaning of life. What is the purpose of life? Okay, I get a pigeonhole and then I die. And what happens after that? People don't even want to think about it. Or if they, maybe in a very sentimental way, they think about it. Just like in the newspaper, you'll see a photo of the departed soul, Swargaprat, it's written, gone to heaven. We don't know where they went, but it's just presumed that they went to heaven. Everyone, they say they go to heaven. I don't know if they're all going to heaven, but it's just presumed. They must have gone to heaven because they used to go to the Ganesh temple once every week. So they must have been good. Never mind what else they did in between. But they must have been good. So most people foolishly don't even question the goals of life, which are presented in a culture of foolish, unhappy people. If we're able to step back a little bit, disentangle our complete involvement, complete emotional, mental, physical, psychological involvement in the whole society in which we're involved. We're just completely in the middle of it. We're a pea floating in the soup. If we could just step back a bit and look and see our position and see the position of the whole society and think about it objectively, we should see that actually there's no happiness here. There's no particular meaning to it. It's all finished in a few days. What's going on? But the educational system, combined with the mass media, combined with the general culture, it's not that there's any conspiracy as such going on, but it's everyone is cooperating in propagating and maintaining the hoax that life in this world is meant for working, earning money, and that's it. Be happy like that. You have so many choices. You can buy a 24-inch TV or a 26-inch TV. You can choose this channel or that channel. You can choose this brand of tea or that brand of tea. You have so many choices. But it's all empty and meaningless. When we see that for all the struggle, you simply have to die. And then what happens after that? People don't know. So Srila Prabhupada's importance is that he does know. And he teaches others to act in a way in which they can escape this syndrome, which is simultaneously foolish and extremely painful and nasty. It's called life in the material world. It's foolish to go on and on and on, life after life, in a condition which it simply perpetuates our suffering. But people do, because they don't know anything else and they don't think of anything else. Srila Prabhupada stepped into this world and pointed out how we're all misled. We all need to change our life. We all need to recognize that which we are looking for, namely happiness, is not available through the means that everyone in this world presumes it to be. People equate happiness with sensual pleasure, which is not happiness. Or they equate happiness with the conditions under which one can have a good try at getting sense pleasure. In other words, you get yourself an apartment and a TV and a family, and all this is supposed to be an ideal situation for being happy. But people aren't happy. And even if they think they're happy, they can't stay in that situation. So, Srila Prabhupada was actually important because he brought this consciousness to a world which was largely unconscious of it. Although everyone should see that we're suffering in this world, everyone should see that the goals of life that people pursue are not meaningful. Everyone should see that there must be more to life than simply working, struggling, dying. People don't see this. So Srila Prabhupada, he was an empowered representative of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who brought actual knowledge to the world by which people can be benefited. People glorify saintly persons because they're supposed to be acting selflessly for the benefit of others. Just like Mother Teresa has been so much glorified for her contribution of lifting dying people off the streets of Calcutta, where they lived all their lives, and bring them to her home so they can spend the last few hours in her home and die there. Although, how that helps them, I'm not exactly sure. But anyway, she's glorified for that. Of course, if they happen to recover, then they're back out on the street again. She also had a leper home. And she talked of love, although she was eating meat every day, as does the Dalai Lama, who talks of peace and eats meat every day. So, but they're glorified as saintly people. But they have no actual knowledge of how to escape from birth and death. They themselves are, according to the actual knowledge, Vedic knowledge, they themselves are sinful. Although they may have good, somewhere they may have some good intentions, but due to their lack of knowledge in the name of performing religious or spiritual activities, they're actually misleading and harming others. Srila Prabhupada was an actual welfare worker. He actually desired the benefit of others and knew how to give that and worked tirelessly to give that benefit to others. Then why is he not as famous as the Dalai Lama or Mother Teresa or Swami Vivekananda, glorified even today? Use another meat eater. Why are they not glorified? Well, we can put it down to the mass foolishness of people who they glorify someone who doesn't as saintly, who doesn't disturb them too much. They like to think of a saintly person as someone who is nice and good and doesn't disturb us too much. Srila Prabhupada disturbed others. He spoke in a manner that he spoke the truth, which most people are not honest enough to accept. Even if we tell people that meat eating is sinful, people get upset. If we tell people that their whole life is completely foolish, then they get upset. But actually it is, because people, they come into this world, they stay a short time, they don't know why they came into this world, how they got into this situation, they're going to die soon, and they don't try to understand what is the actual situation, what is reality. They don't try to understand. They may superficially become a member of a religious sect, but again, it's actually the knowledge of Vedanta Sutra, the contribution of Vyasadeva. It doesn't begin with a statement that now you should now try to understand God. That comes later. That's not the first thing he says. He says, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now that we are in the human form of life, and one who is in the human form of life and who has perceived that the endeavor for sense gratification is useless, insubstantial, who wants to go beyond that, such a person should inquire into the nature of the spiritual. What is God? That discussion will come later. If we try to understand, if we think about God without trying to understand the nature of the spiritual, that because of lack of knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit, then if we think of God, we'll think of God as in a materialistic way, because we have no knowledge of what is actually spiritual. That's why in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna, he doesn't teach Arjuna about the nature of God. Krishna himself is, for lack of a better word, God, or Srila Prabhupada would more accurately state, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are various terms. Bhagavan, Parameshwara, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavan. This one word, God, is highly insufficient. Of course, any word is insufficient, but it's quite vague. It's also associated with Christian mythology. They talk about Hindu mythology. Well, there's Christian mythology. So, Krishna doesn't speak about that in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. He first of all, even though Bhagavad Gita is quite a short work, he quite exhaustively, considering the brevity of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna quite exhaustively distinguishes between the nature of the soul and the nature of matter. Because without understanding this, if we try to understand the nature of God, then we cannot but misunderstand. The nature of matter is asat achit nirananda. It is temporary, devoid of consciousness, and devoid of pleasure. The nature of the soul, or atma, is sachit ananda, is eternal, conscious, and by nature, blissful. So Krishna, he gives several examples to distinguish between the soul and matter, between the spiritual and the material, and only after that does he come to the nature of God, because unless we understand that we have no actual relationship with matter or with this material world, then what happens is that we take God to be a cosmic blessing machine for our enjoyment within this material world. Or we have an idea that we will go to God and God will facilitate our enjoyment. Just like this. Swarga prapt. Someone died, they must have gone to heaven. And they'll be in. And what do you do there? You enjoy yourself. The leader of, as you may know, the Christian churches, there are, I suppose, yeah, three main divisions, two or three. you could put Roman Catholic together with the Orthodox churches. So, yeah, say Roman Catholic, Orthodox, and Protestant churches. So the Protestant churches, the first one, chronologically, historically, is the Church of England. The head of the Church of England is called the Archbishop of Canterbury, and he's accepted, at least informally, as the religious leader of literally millions of Christian Protestants throughout the world. Now, they're generally old men, because to get such a high position, usually it takes a lifetime of struggle within the corporate world of the Church of England to get right up to the top. So they die off pretty quick. You go through a few archbishops of Canterbury in a short period. So a few archbishops of Canterbury ago, one of them was asked, what do you plan to do when you go to heaven? They presumed he was going to heaven, even though he was eating beef and drinking wine and doing most of the things that most superficial Christians do. So he replied that for the first 100 years I will glorify God, and then for the rest of eternity I will enjoy myself. Which is incredibly ignorant proposition coming from someone who's supposed to be the religious leader of literally millions of people. And for anyone who's had even a slight acquaintance with the spiritual knowledge given in Srila Prabhupada's books, they can understand this is a ludicrous proposition. Because the idea that I will enjoy myself is completely antithetical to actual spiritual life. Because actual spiritual life means that I should act for the enjoyment of Krishna. So to spend 100 years glorifying Him, okay, I did my duty, now forget Him and I'll be off. But actual spiritual life means to be completely absorbed in Krishna eternally without any other desire. Recognizing our position as servant of Krishna. An actual devotee doesn't desire anything else. He doesn't think that God is the facilitator of my enjoyment. The idea that I will enjoy separately from Him is our very disease. But because people are not trained in spiritual knowledge, they take to religion, but they simply project their material conceptions onto it. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave actual spiritual knowledge. All these so-called gurus also, they're also cheating because they don't give actual spiritual knowledge. Someone gives Ayurvedic medicine, someone else teaches yoga, another one gives some kind of personality development mixed up with a few misquotes from the Upanishads. And in this way they all cater to people's material desires to have healthy bodies and successful careers, which is absolutely nothing to do with actual spiritual life, which begins with the understanding that this material world is not our actual place. We don't belong in this material atmosphere. The endeavor to become happy in material life is the very cause of our bondage. So if anyone in the name of religion or spirituality teaches about how to be happy in this material world, either individual or how to adjust to the material life, either individually or societally, they just proves their own ignorance, and that they are cheating others by taking the role of a religious leader when they themselves don't know. They're quacks, just like a doctor if he tries to practice, but he's not trained. Or he's being trained by another quack, the parampara of ducks. They don't know. They don't actually know what is the difference between spirit and matter. Just like Mother Teresa, when she was asked about her meat eating, she said she couldn't give any proper answer. she said, "Well, you know, I know it's not because I know it's not very good, but anyway," she couldn't give any proper. There is no proper answer. Dalai Lama said that, "Well, I tried to be a vegetarian for some time, then I got sick, so then I started eating meat again." Very shallow people, but people love them because everyone in this world is shallow. They love shallow leaders who pretend to be substantial. People in this world, they don't actually want the real thing. They want to be cheated. And the whole advertising industry stands testimony to this. Pepsi Cola. Who would ever buy a Pepsi Cola if it wasn't advertised? No one. Because there's no good flavor, no nutritional value. There's nothing of any. There's nothing particularly of attractive about Pepsi Cola. But billions of dollars are required to advertise it, and then people buy it. And they show cricket stars in this country, cricket stars holding a Pepsi Cola, and everyone knows that the cricket star has been paid to hold a Pepsi Cola and pretend that he likes it. And even if he likes it, what does it matter to you? What doesn't mean that, but you should like. But the idea is, well, if he likes it, then you should like it. Although his ability to hit a ball with a bat or anything, or throw a ball at someone holding a bat, which in itself is not a meaningful activity, but their ability to do that, to throw balls or catch balls or hit balls with pieces of wood, better than other people throw balls or catch balls or hit balls with pieces of wood, doesn't mean anything about your ability to, or your qualification to recommend what is good to drink. But I mean, to have high regard for people for their ability to throw balls or catch balls or hit balls in the beginning is stupid. But, and then because they're holding a Pepsi Cola, and then you think, "I should drink Pepsi Cola," that's more stupidity. But it works, and people buy Pepsi Cola. Which, that's just one example. Anything, you see, in the West, I'm a bit out of touch with the West, but probably still going on. Car tires traditionally have been marketed by showing a car tire with a picture of a very sexy woman dressed just about. It's still like that? It's a long tradition. Now, car tires are about the most unsexy thing you could possibly think, isn't it? There's really nothing very sexy about a car tire whatsoever. But they put it with a it works. They put a picture of the sexy girl, and people buy the tire, which it just proves that people are incredibly stupid, and they want to be stupid, because even if they thought even a little bit, they should think that, well, actually the fact that the cricket star is holding the Pepsi doesn't mean that I should drink it. Or the fact that there's a piece of paper with a photograph on it of a car tire, and superimposed on that is a picture of a sexy girl, doesn't give any testimony as to the value of that car tire compared to other car tires. I mean, actually, if you're buying a car tire, you should think, how long is it going to last? Is it a safe tire? This is what you should actually think. But that doesn't sell tires. And sexy photos of sexy girls sell tires. So this all stands as testimony to how incredibly stupid this society is. And stupidity is institutionalized. The standard for being a normal, accepted member of modern human society is to be a total idiot. Right? You go along with what everyone else is going along with. Be a success, get a job, earn lots of money, buy Pepsi, you might even buy some whiskey, have a big TV. It's stupidity piled on top of stupidity. And therefore, people like a guru or a nun, or a nun means here a Christian nun, not a Punjabi chapati. They like nuns, I say. So, I just wanted to clarify that. They like a guru or a nun or a lama, spiritual leader who talks very nicely. Peace, love, compassion, but no meaning, no actual meaning behind it. Srila Prabhupada pointed out, you want to talk about love? Stop killing the animals. Why do you want to love the human beings and kill the animals? What is the meaning of your compassion if you're killing animals? Actual love means to tell people that they should wake up from the illusion of this material life and understand that it's not pleasant. Even if you have plenty of Pepsi in your fridge and a big TV and a sexy wife, it's not pleasant. Life is not pleasant in this material world. In fact, it's extraordinarily unpleasant. And the only really intelligent thing to do in this world is to make the endeavor to understand that everything in this world is of no value. What is actually of value? We should find out what is that actually of value. Vedavyas, he gives that. The knowledge of Krishna, knowledge of the soul, knowledge of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada is so important because he is given the actual knowledge which Vedavyas has given. Knowledge of reality. Knowledge beyond the superficiality of this world. But people, they don't recognize that. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he built... You may think, why should a sadhu have such nice rooms? Srila Prabhupada has such nice rooms. You know why? Because people are stupid. That's why. You understand the connection? No. Srila Prabhupada, he is a pure devotee of Krishna. He can sit anywhere and give pure spiritual knowledge. But if he sits under a tree or sits in some small hut, people they won't recognize. So they think someone is important if they have a big room, marble, and think, oh, it must be a very important guru. Srila Prabhupada was teaching Krishna consciousness in India. People weren't interested. He went to the West, brought back Westerners, and Indian people think that Westerners are important. So they say, oh, he's very good. He was the same person before he went, but no one was interested in listening. So, we should try to understand the importance of Srila Prabhupada, and what did he actually teach? Those of you who are so fortunate now, who are coming to Krishna consciousness, please try to understand what he taught. Jai Prabhupada. What did he teach? He had a message which is meant for transforming our life. Transforming our life doesn't just mean giving up eating meat or even giving up drinking tea. There's a lot more to it than that. That's good. If we stop eating meat, that's a good start. But there's a lot more to it than that. It means totally transforming our consciousness from considering ourselves to be enjoyers of the material world and understanding that I'm not the enjoyer of anything. I'm the servant of Krishna. So nothing in this material world is of any value, and especially this value to, especially this endeavor to prove oneself very big in this material world. It's simply an exhibition of one's foolishness. it just shows that we're deeply trapped in the illusion of thinking myself part of this material world. So the idea to think oneself very big, it just shows that one is a big fool. So I started this lecture by declaring my own greatness and importance. That is foolishness. But that may be required. He has written so many books. His TV lectures have been heard by millions worldwide. Well, Amitabh Bachchan is much more famous than me. He lives just round the corner. You can go on pilgrimage there if you like and bow down at the gate. You're not allowed in, that's for sure. His television programs have been seen by many more people. So, does that mean you should listen to Amitabh Bachchan? No, I don't recommend it. Well, who am I to say? What is my importance? My actual importance is that I listen to Srila Prabhupada. And I can help you by advising you to listen to Srila Prabhupada. Actually, we have recently has been released one or two DVDs? That's proper? How many? Three DVDs in one set with all of Srila Prabhupada's recorded lectures and conversations released so far in English and Hindi. They're all available. So I recommend listen to them and read Srila Prabhupada's books. You will be benefited in the best possible way. So that's made me important. Krishna's important. We are not important. When we can understand we're not important, and we stop trying to be important, then we can come to our proper position of understanding that my actual position is Krishna Das Anudas Anudas Anudas. We have no actual importance. But Krishna is very kind, even though he's so great. He accepts us if we are prepared to accept him. But we have to accept him on his terms, not on our terms. If we want to convert Krishna simply into a cosmic order supplier, God, I need this, I need this, give me that, give me this, then we won't find Krishna. Krishna reveals himself to a devotee who is akinchan. Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribhir Edamana Madhav Puman Naivar Hatyabidhatung Vai Twam Akinchana Gochara. Kunti Devi, she said that persons who are concerned with promoting themselves, that I'm from a very important family, I'm very rich, I have lots of money, I'm very beautiful, good-looking, I'm very intelligent and educated. So in this way, people are trying to promote themselves as being very great in the material sense. They're simply proud. And that pride separates them from Krishna. Krishna is akinchana gochara, one who thinks, I have nothing, I have no interest in anything in this world. Such a person who thinks that the only thing of any importance to me is my service to Krishna, then such a person can attain Krishna. Srila Prabhupada came to teach this. We're very grateful to him. He gave himself to us in the form of his books. Please read Srila Prabhupada's books. And also you can listen to his lectures, which are now available. You have that available? You don't have them. Whatever stock we had is finished. It must be available. Is it available on the stall there? Anyway, get it somehow or other. Find out. order it. Listen, how many lectures are there? More than 700, is it? So, if you listen to one a day, that'll take you 2 years. And if you listen very carefully, then your life will be transformed in the best possible way. That I can promise. Please listen to Srila Prabhupada. Is there any question, please? Thank you for listening to me. Please listen to Srila Prabhupada. No questions? Any questions? The mic has gone out. It's coming back.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I just want to know, I've come across to know in one of the lectures that I have attended that there's already prediction being made about this yoga, this Kali Yuga. So, and that's how this Kali Yuga is performing, or going in the same direction as the prediction is being made. So, is it wrong or is it right? Isn't, if we do not follow the prediction, aren't we going to go against the prediction made by the Lord?
What do you mean to say? That in Kali Yuga it's stated that everything will be bad, so we'd better be bad and then we'll fulfill the prediction. We should follow the Shastra.
That's been stated, that's what I want.
Yeah, that's summarized in Srimad Bhagavatam. Tatascha anudinam dharma satyam shocham kshamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshan tyayur ayur balang smitihi. Day by day in Kali Yuga, dharma, satya, shocham, kshama, daya, ayu, bala, sharirik bal, and smriti, these will all decrease for the benefit of those who don't know the meaning of these words. Dharma, what is dharma? That's a big topic. Superficially translated as religion. Satyam, truth. Shocham, cleanliness. Kshama, tolerance. Daya, compassion. Kalena balina rajan nangj, ayu, lifespan. Bodily strength. And memory. These will all decrease day by day. Well, it's not that we should deliberately convert ourselves into rascals so that we can serve Krishna in this way by fulfilling the prophecy of Shastra. That it's something bad doesn't mean that we have to go with it. In the same Shastra, it's stated, Kale dosha nidhe rajan astihi eko mahanguna kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sanga parang vrajet. That even though this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is one good quality that by chanting the name of Krishna, we can be free from all these faults and go to Krishna. So why not follow that? The purpose of stating this in Shastra is not to encourage people to be rascals, but to point out the depravities of Kali Yuga, and for people who are sufficiently intelligent to take note of that, to protect themselves from that, and to take the formula to become delivered from that. Doesn't that make sense? If there's a weather forecast that there's going to be a cyclone, tornado, you don't get that in Bombay, hardly. Anyway, earthquake. There was something almost resembling, in Latur there was, here in Bombay there was a little shaking also. Okay, let's say that there's a major earthquake expected. Of course, they never predict it properly. So, and you know, probably there will be tremendous damage to property, and then there's an earthquake, but your property doesn't get damaged. Not much property gets damaged, so then we shall go out and damage all the property just to make the prediction come true. Does that make sense? It doesn't seem to make much sense. Any other question? Yeah. Please speak into the mic. Okay, I can hear you. You please speak and I'll repeat the question into this mic which is working. How can one come out of the syndrome of thinking oneself important when even in Krishna consciousness we may have been practicing Krishna consciousness for some years, and within Krishna consciousness we may, within the movement we may have some position, we may have some decisions to take by which we think I am important, I'm doing so many things, despite superficially understanding the philosophy. How can we come out of this syndrome? Well, that's why we have to discuss these matters again and again. We are diseased with the disease of material life. It's deeply ingrained bad habits going back from crores of lifetimes. So to change that consciousness may take some time, but that's why we have to go on hearing about this. Hearing, chanting, serving. And gradually purification will come. There's a difference between theoretical knowledge and realization. And theoretically we should be fully realized immediately, because material attitudes don't make any sense. But practically we see that we don't transform fully overnight. That's why there's a process of sadhana bhakti. There would be no need for a process of sadhana bhakti if it was expected that everyone just by hearing the philosophy once would be immediately purified. The process of sadhana bhakti is for the very reason that people don't get purified immediately. So if you're not purified immediately, then you can understand that I have to keep on going. Have faith that it will work. Therefore Rupa Goswami, who outlines the process of sadhana bhakti in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in another work, in Sri Upadeshamrita, recommends among the important qualities for practicing devotees, patience. Don't expect everything to happen immediately. It will take some time. But also don't think that because it doesn't happen immediately that it's not working. That's another mistake. Therefore patience is required. Right? Don't give up faith. I'll go back to my meat eating and everything else. What's the use of Krishna consciousness? Better to drink some booze, go to some parties. It doesn't make any sense. Even if our progress is very slow, still it's much better to be trying in Krishna consciousness than simply succumbing to the foolishness of Maya. That makes sense, doesn't it? Even to be a neophyte devotee is a far better position than being a highly advanced materialist. Yeah, anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you were saying that Prabhupada, he said about love, then stop killing animals and compassion, show that love. You were saying about that. So one of my friends, he's a Muslim, so I was talking to him and I asked him that why do you eat beef and non-veg. So he said that if we don't eat them, their population will increase and then they will eat us. They will eat us. So that is the philosophy of that Muslim.
Well, if the human population is increasing also, should we eat the humans? Same logic. One Muslim preacher who's converting many Hindus into Muslims, among the more stupid of his many stupid statements. I'm not saying he's stupid because I'm not saying that everything in Islam is stupid. I'm just saying this particular person makes many stupid statements. One of them was that Muslims are peaceful people because they eat peaceful animals. Again, following that logic, then if you want to be very peaceful, then you should eat peaceful Muslims. If you want to talk logically, what are the logical consequences of such a statement? The best way to keep down the population, the burgeoning population of dangerous animals like chickens and goats that will eat us. Wait a minute! I never saw. Man-eating chickens. So we have to kill them. So the human population is also increasing, so better eat them too. It's often difficult in the modern age to speak anything sensible. You see, people, like I say, people have dedicated their lives to foolishness. That you could, the whole advertising industry works on the premise that people are foolish, they want to be foolish, and they want to be cheated. So if people are willingly foolish, then it's difficult to expect a high level of intellectual discourse with them. So we'll finish there. Hare Krishna.